we're just going to keep on trucking. I think we have enough time to get through item number five. Item number five is an update on the status of agricultural land discharge program. Mr. Ben Zabitsky and Ms. Rebecca Fitzgerald and Mike Hyatt from the Oregon Department of Environmental Law. And again, this item, please, if you want to, bring speaker cards up and give them to Patty if you wish to address this item.
Good morning, members of the board. My name is Ben Zabinski of your staff, and I work in the Watershed Adaptive Management Unit on the Agricultural Lands Discharge Program. And today I'm going to be presenting with my colleagues here, Rebecca Fitzgerald, who's my senior, and Mike Hyatt, who is the is with the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. And we're going to give an update on the Regional Board's Agricultural Lands Discharge Program and our coordination with Oregon in the Upper Klamath River watershed. Staff last presented to the board on this in January 2015. So staff are proposing changes to the order of permit development within the Agricultural Lands Program. And in this presentation, I'm going to give a summary of those changes, as well as a general description of some of the programs being implemented and developed. I'll also provide an overview of agriculture in the region, some of the history of development of the program, and then explain our current approach to permit development and other initiatives. So there's a number of programs under the Agricultural Lands Discharge Program, and there's different ongoing implementation efforts. But in this presentation, we're going to focus on the Scott and Shasta TMDL conditional waiver programs, the vineyard and orchard permit development for the North Coast region, our water quality stewardship, our watershed stewardship approach in the Upper Klamath River and Tule Lake watersheds, and we'll give an update on our water quality monitoring efforts in the Smith River Plain. So this slide, I'll go through some background on agriculture in the North Coast region. There's about 360,000 acres of agricultural lands within the region, and that doesn't include the land used for cannabis cultivation. We have 70,000 acres of vineyards in Sonoma and Mendocino County. There's about 60,000 acres of row crops and mixed ag in the Tule Lake Basin. We have hay crops throughout the region. We have dairies in Sonoma and Humboldt County, and also a few in Del Norte. And then over here in the Smith River Basin, also in Del Norte County, we have about 1,300 acres of easterly bulb fields that are mixed with pasture that's rotated with the lily bulb crop. That's what we have for agriculture in our region. Now I'll move to the policy behind the development of the ag program, why we're developing the program. So the Agricultural Lands Discharge Program is made of different permits and implementation programs, with the overall goal of these programs is to require controls, i.e. management practices and other controls on discharges of waste from agricultural activities the permit program is addressing. So these programs are specific to geographic areas and commodities we have here in the North Coast. One of the main reasons for the development of the program is the California Water Code and the state non-point source policy requirements. So the state in 2004 put out the state non-point source policy that required the regional boards to develop permits for all non-point sources of discharge in the state, including agriculture. So through this presentation, I'm going to be talking about waste discharge requirements, WDRs, as well as conditional waivers of WDRs. And these are the two forms of permits used to regulate non-point sources, which includes agriculture. The statewide directive, the non-point source policy, prompted the regions to begin developing permits for agriculture throughout the state. And now all the regions in our state have agriculture programs covering some percentage of the acreage in their region. And here in the North Coast region, we have some of our agriculture programs developed already, but there's still more work to be done to cover all the agriculture as we were required to do. So we've been prioritizing which permit staff is going to work on, and I'll explain this proposed strategy during this presentation. Another reason for developing this program is the implementation of TMDLs. We have TMDLs in the Klamath and Lost River, Scott River and Chester River watersheds, and those TMDL plans contains specific direction for the regional board to develop a permitting mechanism for agriculture in those watersheds. So here's what our existing agricultural lands discharge program permits look like, and these are the existing ones. We have a Scott and Shasta River Watershed TMDL conditional waiver of waste discharge requirements, which are separate permits developed per the TMDL implementation plans and adopted for those watersheds in 2006 that primarily address agriculture. And we've been implementing those permits since 2006, and we've renewed those waivers in 2012. And Rebecca Fitzgerald is going to give more information on those programs. So next we have cannabis and related activities. Those are region-wide waivers of WBRs. We just heard about that, and that was adopted in 2015. So we're not going to focus on that in this presentation. We have a series of permits to regulate discharges from cow dairies in the region, and you've been recently updated on that as well. We also have a U.S. Forest Service lands waiver of WDRs, and while this mainly deals with timber harvest, it also includes grazing allotments, and discharges from those allotments are covered under the U.S. Forest Service waiver, which was adopted in 2010. So the development of the agricultural lands program has been going on for a while now. It began in 2010 with the adoption of the Klamath and Lost River TMDLs, which, as I mentioned, contains the specific direction to develop a permit for agriculture. So after we started that effort, we decided to expand the scope of the program to cover the entire region in order to satisfy the non-point source policy requirements to regulate all non-point sources region-wide. We put together a stakeholder process to develop the program that included a stakeholder advisory group that was made up of representatives of different interests in the region, including agencies, tribes, industry groups, environmental organizations, and other stakeholders. We began to meet with the stakeholder groups, and for those meetings, we had the group divided into subgroups, because it's a big region. There's a lot of different interests. I think we had about 60 people in the advisory group, and we had it divided into these different areas, crop types and geographic areas of the crops that are grown in our region. So the reason for that is that there's differences in terms of the methods of cultivation, the use of chemicals, potential risk to water quality. They each have their own specifics associated with it. And we were trying to bring these different types of agriculture into one region-wide permit. We began to realize that we were running the risk of taking too much of a one-size-fits-all approach. And it seemed like those industries and specific water quality issues would be better represented by having separate permits that could contain conditions specific to those issues associated with the crops and commodities and areas. So in 2013, the board gave staff direction to develop separate permits as opposed to one region-wide permit. And, you know, moving forward, we're going to be able to draw a lot on that initial experience and the relationships that we've built through the process as we develop these permits. And that process that we went through is all, and will continue to, is all documented on our website. You know, we have presentations from meetings, we have draft documents, permit language that was used and that was developed, and we can use all of that moving forward. So since 2013, staff have been working on three permits simultaneously. That came out of the region-wide process. And with only one PY to work on permit development, staff have made some progress on all three of these permits, but not really significant progress on any one of them. So, this is the reason for the prioritization. So here's what we're proposing to prioritize our workload. So the first priority is the renewal of the Scott and Shasta conditional waiver programs. And while this is happening, we'll be working on a permit to address discharges from vineyards and orchards in the region. And then our next priority is to develop a permit for discharges from agricultural lands in the Tule Lake watershed. And then finally a permit to address discharges associated with Easter lily bulb cultivation. And we also have other agricultural areas in our region that we intend to address, but they're a relatively lower priority, including grazing on private lands region-wide, in addition to the grazing in the Scott and Shasta, which we already have a permit for. We'll also address agricultural lands in the Bead Valley watershed, which is another agricultural area near Tule Lake, towards the northeast part of our region. Okay, so now I'm going to give more details on our different ongoing efforts. We will. And I'll start with an update on the development of the permit to address vineyards and orchards in the North Coast region. This will be a region-wide permit, although most of the vineyards are in Sonoma and Mendocino County. One of the main reasons for focusing on this permit is that we have a significant number of acres of vineyards and orchards, about 70,000, and there's a need there. And there's a risk that's presented by vineyards that, while it's not an inherent risk, there's potential for erosion, removal of riparian vegetation, and nutrient pesticide discharges. There's also momentum to develop to address vineyards. The San Francisco Bay Regional Board is close to adopting a permit to address vineyards and is currently responding to comments. We've been following that process. We've reviewed their permit. We've provided comments. And we'd like to make our permits as consistent as possible, given that the regions are right next to each other. But we also need to recognize that there's differences between our regions. Another reason to prioritize this permit is that we have a good support system in place right now through various third-party programs, where a grower can enroll in the program, follow the water quality plan, and have a third-party auditor come in and inspect the vineyard to ensure that the vineyard is in compliance with the third party, and then it can be certified. I missed one thing on that last slide, that another reason for the permit is to address 303 delisted impairments in our region, including the Russian River. So now I'm going to go through the likely permit scope, and this is what one could expect in the permit in a general sense. The scope was developed through the advisory group process to develop the region-wide permit, and basically what it contains is the heart of the permit are the permit conditions, which are water quality requirements that are enforceable. They deal with risk to water quality specific to vineyards and orchards, such as sediment control, riparian management, and pesticide and nutrient runoff. And the growers would be expected to implement practices to meet the requirements. And compliance is going to be mainly based on the implementation and maintenance of those practices. The selected practices would be put into a farm water quality management plan, and then implement it on the ground. And the permit will include monitoring and reporting requirements to verify and report that those practices have been implemented. There has to be some way for the growers to report to the regional board and to the public what types of practices are being implemented to comply with the permit. And another piece of the permit is this option for third-party certification. So in that case, the grower would choose to work with a third-party certifier. And ideally, if they get the certification, they would be in compliance with the permit. That's the idea. And finally, the permit will define an enrollment process. And it's likely that there'll be different tiers that the grower can choose to enroll in. The tiers would categorize different types of vineyards, say based on size, slope, environmental factors, level of compliance, or whether or not they're enrolled in a third-party program. So these types of details are something that we need to work out through the development process with input from our stakeholders. Okay, so this slide we have the schedule for the development of the vineyard and orchard WDR. So this year, 2017, we'll mainly be developing a draft permit internally in preparation for an advisory group meeting towards the end of the year. In 2018, we'll be preparing our CEQA documentation, meeting with the advisory group a second time, and then going through the formal public review process in 2019 leading up to the adoption hearing. And each year, I just want to mention that we have to be cognizant of the grape harvest, which is around September to November timeframe, and make sure that we don't hold any public parts of the process or advisory group meetings during the harvest. So in all, it's going to take about 2.5 years to get through all the steps. But I think developing a permit involving stakeholders in counties, different interests, it's going to take that amount of time to make sure that we have all the details right, that we've taken into consideration all the types of input we're going to get. And we also have to keep in mind that, you know, we only have a single staff person working on developing this program. So the steps are going to take a little bit longer than if we had a team working on this.
Is that okay?
Okay, so this is a bit of a long presentation, so I'm going to pause here for questions from the board, and then we'll move on to the other efforts.
Thank you. Board Member Giusti.
Thank you. Just a quick question, Ben.
Yeah.
You answered two of my questions. The one I have is when we talk about the WDR for orchards and vineyards, is it only applied to existing operations? Or how will we address new developments? Will they be folded into this? Will there be a pre-plan? Are we not addressing new developments?
You know, I think that's something that we haven't decided yet. And go ahead, Matt.
I would agree that we have not decided. It really is a CEQA scoping challenge, and so we haven't made any final decisions.
The reason I ask is driving up yesterday, I don't know if you noticed, on the west side of Highway 101, it must have been around Piercy or something, there's about a 20-acre piece of cleared land on a very steep slope that was covered in plastic. So obviously somebody had done some vegetation removal during the rainy season and was hoping to prevent damage from plastic. But like so many other activities, and I'm going to relate to timber operations because I know them best, I mean, there are these times of operation that are appropriate versus inappropriate. So,
right.
You know, you clear a steep slope on October 15th, yeah. You're at risk of something going sideways. So, I just throw that out there. In terms of prevention of problems, new developments, I think you should keep discussing it, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think that is the time to get the development right, and that can prevent future problems in the development phase, so I agree with that.
Kelly.
So how many people in your unit are working on this work plan to do all this?
So for the vineyard and orchard and the lily bulbs in Tule Lake, it's myself, and with Tule Lake we also have Clayton Krager that's been doing a lot of the water quality, the watershed stewardship there. Mm-hmm. For Scott and Shasta, we have another person, Eli Scott, who's a new hire, and he's running those programs. But as far as the development goes, it's me.
So there's just as Ben said, there's program implementation for permits that we already have in place, and so those we have different levels of staffing. In our dairy program, we have one staff person to implement that program. The Scott and Shasta River TMDL waivers, we have one staff person primarily devoted to those efforts. But for the program development, the vineyards, Tule Lake, Lily Bulb, it's been, which is exactly why we have come to the place where we really need to prioritize our effort. Kind of stealing a little bit from some of Ben's concluding comments, but what we've found is to nurse along the development of three programs, frankly, it hasn't been effective. We haven't made a lot of progress. And so what we're making the plea to the board is for your support for the need to prioritize our efforts with the focus on getting the Scott and Shasta TMDL waiver reviewed and then focusing on the development of the vineyard and orchard permit.
And I wanted to, but I mean, just to be a little bit more explicit on that, staff has been, we've zagged and now we're zigging back again to, we started with a broad umbrella permit, started to go towards individual permits, and you've done a little bit everywhere, and I give you credit for that, for sure. I appreciate, by the way, Rebecca, you gave us a work plan the other day. You did exactly what you asked us to do, which is to give us a work plan on this stuff, and there's detail that actually isn't here, which is fine, because that's just a going forward work plan. I just, going forward, this program has been hampered by the fact that it's staff limited. It just in funding and out of the state board, I know, and I believe Matt St. John, there's been requests for additional staff for ag programs to state board repeatedly. And I believe that's ongoing. I believe it's really needed. I believe that we have issues. The Shasta and Scott, our existing programs, we now have two terms under our belt with the Shasta and Scott. To take that on first, that's coming because we have that coming in October. That's a renewal that I expect we'll hear something about very soon. And my request is we look at that honestly, what's happened, what hasn't happened, and we go forward from there. Looking forward then to the work plan that we have for Vineyard and Orchard here, you know, I look at a schedule and I believe you just said it's about 2.5 years, and I appreciate that, especially as a one-man band trying to get through 2.5 years of ag. And you're talking about a pretty robust, not only process, but a robust community that is going to take quite a lot of work to get done, acknowledging the fact, too, that Region 2, our sister agency of the South that has part of Sonoma County and Napa County, is going through this right now, and I believe optimistically they're maybe going to get done this year, perhaps with their permit. So that gives us some roadmap. I just wanted to affirm it would be my desire as a board member to see this through, and that we need to do it in an expedient or forthright manner. No pox on you guys at all, but once we do this, once we start down this road and do start on especially the Vineyard process here, we may, I guess I would reserve the right to look at that schedule and to see where we can do things and maybe not do things,
right,
and to check in as we go. That's an important permit from a water quality and a kind of a threat to water quality scenario here. We're talking 60 to 70,000 acres of developed vineyard. There's a lot of great activities that are already in place with that. You mentioned these third-party programs, Ben. A lot of that community is self-organized. That's not to say it's a perfect world out there. So as a process and to see this through, I appreciate the work plan. You did exactly what we asked you to do, which is to give us a schedule and kind of scope of work here. And we'll work on that as we go forward. And just to put a chip down here, I'd like to see us just intentionally go through this. That's my desire. So I'm here to support you through that and to work with you on that, for sure. Ms. Rappaport.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've followed this process, as you know, Ben, since before my time on this board. I was part of some of those stakeholder meetings on the initial sort of one-size-fits-all approach. As a stakeholder, I was very supportive of the direction of splitting out to different agricultural commodities. And I've mentioned this to staff, but I just want to mention it here so that my fellow board members know. I'm really supportive of the prioritization that that you're putting forth now. I think it's really important to bite firmly into one of these and get it done. And then, you know, while advancing the science and all of the monitoring that needs to go on the others, but really, you know, bite into one, get it done, and then let's move forward and keep taking bites and getting things done. And I really appreciate the work that you're doing as one staff member trying to move all these forward. So thank you. And thank you for the time frame and the work plan and all that work that's going into getting more of a concrete vision into getting these things done.
Any other questions for Ben?
I'll just comment. I've been a vineyard manager for over 35 years, involved in agriculture in Sonoma, Mendocino, Lake, and Napa counties, and I'm happy to see this, and I'm looking forward to helping and participating.
Yeah, looking forward to that too.
Again, to lend my support to prioritizing and getting things done, but what gives me confidence in the package, you know, shared with us the URL for the lily bulbs report. We know that monitoring is continuing to go on. Trends are positive in that industry. They're moving in the right direction. So again, I think the way you laid it out, and then the way you presented the information, not only are vineyards the grandest scheme in acreage, but you've also balanced it, letting us know where other commodities sit. And so even the list of priorities that you've laid out, I think it makes a lot of sense, and it's the only way you're going to get anything done.
All right. So, you know, other questions on that part of it?
To be clear, we're not done this stuff.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, because there was a question and a pause, and the pause comes off, and we go forward.
Now you have to put up with me again. So, Rebecca Fitzgerald, your staff. And I wanted to step into this presentation a little bit to talk about where we are with the Scott and Shasta TMDL waivers that you guys have already heard a little bit about. This is the high priority for us this year, and Elias Scott of our staff is recently hired, who's going to be doing most of the heavy lifting for this project over the next few months.
Rebecca.
blabbing on the wall.
Okay. Thank you. So just to set the stage, the Scott and Shasta River watersheds are located in Siskiyou County. They drain to the Klamath River. The map that you see here is of the Klamath River Basin starting out in Oregon and draining out to the Pacific. So I want to start out by saying that these two watersheds are a little unique in our region in that we have a more regulatory mechanism in place for both of these watersheds in the form of the conditional waiver of WDRs in order to primarily address discharges from agricultural lands within those two valleys. The waivers came out of the TMDLs and are just one piece of the puzzle of us trying to prevent, minimize, and control sediment, nutrients, and temperature impacts. The waivers are very similar to each other. There's definitely some differences between the two watersheds, but overall they're quite similar. For both, staff are focusing on responsible parties whose ranching or farming operations present higher risks to water quality based on the type of activity that's happening on the landscape, the proximity of those activities to one of the larger water courses, to the main stem of the river, some of the tributaries, and the length of the stream that abuts one of the ranches or the farms. For the Scott, our high priorities kind of translate to some of the valley lands along the main stem and where some of the larger tributaries come in. In the Shasta, our higher priorities are around the spring complexes, downstream of Lake Shastina and Duinell Dam, and also in the upper parts of Little Shasta River. Currently, for both of the waivers, there are no notice of intent process requirements. We rely on standard conditions, and then staff goes out, works directly with landowners in those high priority areas to arrange ranch or farm assessments. We look at if there's any potential discharge, such as places where there could be tailwater entering back into the stream, or where there could be an impact to riparian vegetation that's providing shade, like if there's too much cattle loafing in the channel, for example. If we do find a water quality concern, then we ask the landowners to develop, submit, and implement a farm or a ranch plan in which they lay out what best management practices they're going to take. We have a timeline for the implementation of those actions, and then we follow back up again. We had a little bit of a time period in which we did not have a staff devoted to these two watersheds for about 9 months. We're happy to have Eli on board. We've already scheduled some more assessments in the Scott, so we're kind of back on our feet and running forward again there. As with any waiver, these expire after 5 years. So they were last before you in October of 2012, so we are on schedule to bring them back before you this October. And my picture of the Shasta Valley looks like it didn't show up. There's a beautiful picture of the Shasta Valley out there. I want to give you a little preview of the coming attractions. You're going to hear more over the next few months as to what the content of the waiver renewal is going to look like. But we are working forward with pretty minimal changes to what is currently in those two waivers. Keep it pretty similar to the current process and to the current set of requirements. We still want to have a staff-driven process of going out to the high-priority areas and working one-on-one with the ranchers and the farmers. We still want to have that farm or ranch plan mechanism and staff focused on following up and responding to any complaints that we hear come in or that we see when we're out there on the watershed on the land. We also, in the next few months, want to improve our tracking of getting out and doing the ranch and farm assessments, and also providing some more quantifiable performance measures, performance metrics, tying back to what we had previously put into work plans after the 2012 renewal. You know, you really will hear more. I think the next opportunity in front of the board is going to come this summer. We are working right now on changes to the waivers and would like to put it out for a public review, public comment process in May, and then follow that with some June workshops, WIRECA, potentially a tour at the same time, and then the June board meeting in Santa Rosa, we hope to bring have a more detailed workshop on what the content looks like. with then again the adoption schedule for October.
Can I add just one piece to that, that we intend to also have a staff workshop during that public review period that would be in Siskiyou County. So the board workshop will be in Santa Rosa, but there will also be a staff workshop during the public comment period in Siskiyou County.
In Shasta and Scott, or would you do one?
We would do one in both.
Probably out of Wairika.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I realize the conditional permit's up, and of course we have to take action on that, and I can understand why it's essentially similar, but probably the biggest thing is what's the status, how much progress are we making there? I guess that would be the question.
Well, I have been pretty impressed by how many ranches we've been able to get out on in the Scott Valley. We still want to kind of crunch some of the numbers. We had some initial goals of getting out to, I think, around 50% of the ranches that bordered the main stem of the Scott River. I wish I could tell you what that number was right now, but it's actually, we've gotten out to quite a few. And Andy Baker, prior to his retirement, got out on many of the higher priority ranches downstream of Dwinnell Dam in the Shasta. So there's we've definitely been out. We've seen a lot of places. We've gotten some good grant projects happening in both of those watersheds as well. So progress has been made, and I look forward to compiling some of those numbers to give you some more quantifiables on it.
But you're happy at the level of progress we're making?
Yes. I think that there's more that we will be doing in the future. I think losing some staff through retirements and otherwise over the last year has put us back a little bit further than I would have liked, to be truthful. But I think that we've still made a lot of progress and there's more to be done.
Yeah, I mean, I would just echo that we believe that the framework that the waivers implement is the appropriate framework, which is why we're proposing to essentially renew the existing waivers. It's a framework that requires a lot of coordination between our staff and local landowners, and where we've been able to have that boots on the ground, FaceTime, we're seeing good results, and there is some significant areas of improvement that are needed. There's no question about that.
All right. I'm going to turn it back over to Ben.
Yep.
Having just one podium is a little different than the full table.
Okay, I'm going to move on to Tule Lake Watershed. I'm just going to do a quick introduction here. So while we're focused our staff person on permitting vineyards and orchards, we're also going to be working in the Tule Lake Watershed. And we had previously begun working on a discharge permit there, but with our new proposed strategy, we're looking to shift our effort towards a watershed stewardship approach. And that approach focuses on working collaboratively with our partners in the Upper Klamath Watershed, which includes Tule Lake, in both California and Oregon, to promote water quality improvement and the restoration of ecosystem function in that watershed, throughout the watershed. So we still intend to develop a permit for agricultural lands, for the agriculture on the California side, but we're going to invest some effort into the stewardship approach for the time being. And just one thing that I wanted to mention is part of that approach is to develop memoranda of understanding with agencies and stakeholders in the basin, and to explain more about our coordination with Oregon, we have here Mike Hyatt from the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality.
Mike Hyatt with the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality.
This one?
Okay. So I guess to start out, just to kind of talk about the region that we're discussing here. My responsibility is the Upper Klamath Basin in the Upper Klamath Lake Watershed, the Upper Klamath River, and Lost River Watershed. I also cover Lake County, which kind of covers some of the upper watershed of the Sprague. And we're also talking about, the Tule Lake Irrigation District area, which will also be part of the Klamath Project, which is managed by the Bureau of Reclamation. And for this process, we're kind of looking at a holistic approach at the basin, and we're kind of trying to figure out how we can best bring stakeholders to the table and get the spirit of cooperation and move to improve environmental conditions, to improve water quality. And so we've got a whole host of initiatives that are going on, and this is kind of one of those initiatives where we get a chance to partner with your agency and some others. So this is a depiction of the Klamath Project, and again we have Upper Klamath Lake, it's got the Klamath River, we've got the Lost River, Pisces Clear Lake, Gerber Reservoir, and the Lost River Watershed. And this is the various irrigation districts that use water throughout that system. And the two major irrigation districts are Klamath Irrigation and Tule Lake Irrigation District, which, as you can see, Lost River kind of flows into Oregon. The water, the resource, is used in various irrigation district practices and ultimately ends up down in Tule Lake. Mm-hmm. Also, with the Upper Klamath Lake, water is...
It ultimately goes to the Klamath River.
What's that?
It doesn't ultimately end up in Tule Lake. Some of it gets pumped to the Klamath River.
I'm getting it. Okay. So we got Klamath Lake, which also has a diversion that drops down into these irrigation districts as well. But really, depending on the kind of water year we have, if there's not a very decent water year in the upper Lost River watershed, we could supplement water, or the project can supplement water from Upper Klamath Lake into the Lost River watershed. And also with the Lost River diversion channel, they can move water from the Klamath River over to the Lost River, or vice versa. And then there's also a pumping plant that drops, and I believe it's right here, or this Klamath Falls maybe, but it drops water from this Lost River diversion channel down into the Tule Lake Basin. What can happen from this area here is water can be pumped from this sump through the mountain into the Lower Klamath Lake water, into the Lower Lake Klamath Lake Wildlife Refuge, and ultimately be discharged in the Klamath Strait Stream, which drains back out into the Klamath River.
Except it's not a drain, it's a natural water body.
Initially, it was the old Klamath River, or Lower Klamath River channel, yes, historically. So what we have started to do is look at ways that we can reduce the loading, both from a nutrient and sediment perspective in the upper basin. And we also came up with a basin-wide coordinated effort, which will in turn bring about a planned memorandum of understanding between our agencies, also the Bureau of Reclamation, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and some of the Klamath water user groups. And I think specifically we'll be targeting the Klamath Water Users Association because they represent the two largest water groups, the Klamath Irrigation District and Tule Lake Irrigation District. And we'll basically be using them to develop a TMDL implementation plan. And then also we're partnering with the Klamath tribes throughout the region, also in the Lost River Valley, even though that's not their treaty area. But we're working with them on various water quality approaches and restoration efforts as well. So there is a collaborative relationship between the states and both regions, EPA 9 and 10. And this was really established back when the TMDLs were being developed. There was a memorandum of agreement between all four agencies for TMDL development. And there was also one for an MOU established for TMDL implementation. The development portion is pretty much come and pass. We've developed these TMDLs, they're kind of in place, and I say kind of because the Oregon TMDL is still, we're still working on that. But we're looking more now at this process of developing the implementation and that framework
of the stewardship agreement that we're talking about today a little bit. And the implementation MOU that was in place, it expired, and it is actually being redeveloped right now. We're bringing some of the newer information that we've kind of worked on in the past 5 years. And then, I think this is on the next slide. The Oregon TMDL, when it was issued in 2010, there were 7 petitioners that petitioned against the TMDL, which sparked off a process of reconsideration. So the director of DEQ at that time granted a reconsideration process. Even though that TMDL was approved by EPA, all components except for temperature, the reconsideration process kind of stalled that process. And so that process kind of started. Steve Kirk, my predecessor, retired. There was a 2-year window. I was hired in, and we kind of picked this process back up and started running with it again. And even though that process has been in place and we're still trying to figure out how to finalize that process, we have been moving forward with TMDL implementation. We have TMDL implementation draft plans from both the Bureau of Reclamation and the Klamath Water Users Association. And the plans for this, there's a plan for an umbrella document which would include the stewardship program. And the stewardship program will target, you know, on-farm practices. It will target the way these districts manage water, how they conduct maintenance within their canal systems. Again, targeting nutrient and sediment and any kind of things that would, you know, impact water quality within those systems. Current efforts I felt would be important to bring up here, and that are also part of the stewardship agreement, and that Clayton Prager and I and Rebecca and Ben have also been kind of working on. Right now we have large-scale piping projects in the upper Lost River Valley, and those include piping entire irrigation districts, piping their delivery systems, their laterals, their return systems, and the idea is to really make them more conservative and more efficient, and try to minimize that tailwater return that comes back to the system that's nutrient laden. Also, we have a group called the Farmers Conservation Alliance. This is a EPA-sponsored group, and they come from the Hood River up in Oregon, and they've done a lot of amazing things in Oregon. They're offering some pretty neat programs right now for irrigation districts specifically. They're looking at hydropower potential, but they do assessments of the districts to see where there's leakage assessments. There's just a whole host of things that they offer. But there is, with their program, once the districts enroll, there's a recognized environmental benefit, which usually means that there is going to be more water left in the stream. We've got 2 districts, Horsefly Irrigation District, which is the furthest out on Lost River, and then Lanza Valley Irrigation District, that are actually meeting with the Farmers Conservation Alliance today. We also have an installation of a demonstration wetland. This is on the Oregon-California border on the National Wildlife Refuge. Bureau of Reclamation has set aside 225 acres where they could bring tailwater return from the rangeland on the western side of Area K and run it through basically a filtration wetland and then discharge it into Klamath Strait Stream. They're going to be doing some water quality monitoring of water coming in and leaving just to see how well these wetlands perform with these types of conditions. And then finally, we have a watershed planning effort through NRCS. This is part of the National Water Quality Initiative, and this is again in the Lost River out in those 2 districts I mentioned before, and really will lead to on-farm practices, making them more efficient. There's a lot of dollars that will be focused in this area to bring up, basically it's an irrigation modernization strategy. And again, it's going to focus on water quality improvement, leaving more water in stream, and helping water quality in the long run.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I just wanted to stress the point that the way, you know, Mike was just describing how these watersheds in Northern California are connected, and how, you know, a lot of the water from the Upper Lost River and also Upper Klamath Lake is ultimately the water that makes up Tule Lake. So making improvements in Oregon and in Upper Klamath Lake is going to lead to improvements in water quality in California as well. And that's one of the ideas behind coordinating with Oregon. So I just want to mention again, that we still intend to develop a permit for agricultural lands in the Tule Lake watershed. That's a requirement of state law, and we're going to do that. And we would begin working on that after we invest our efforts in this stewardship approach. Okay, so now I'm going to get to the last area of the region where we're working to address ag discharges in the Smith River Plain. Last area of this presentation. So the Smith River Plain is at the bottom of the Smith River watershed and includes the Smith River Estuary. There's an Easter lily bulb industry there that grows bulbs on about 1,300 acres. And as I mentioned, it's rotated with cattle pasture and hay crops, some of it associated with local dairies. So there's a dual land use there. And the dairies already have coverage under our dairy program. Again, for the Easter lily bulbs, we began developing the permit as part of the development of this region-wide process, and then continued to develop a commodity-specific permit for Easter lily bulb cultivation. And we made some progress on this permit. We met with Easter lily growers and other stakeholders as part of that process. But our focus over the last few years has been on water quality monitoring to inform the permit development. So the regional board staff conducted sampling in the Smith River Plain in 2013 and 2015 to screen the Smith River and the local tributaries that traverse the cultivation area to see what effects lily bulb cultivation may be having on water quality, both groundwater and surface water. So we did a few rounds of sampling in both dry and wet weather, and that was done through the state surface water ambient monitoring program, or the SWAMP program. And we have some preliminary results from that sampling, and that's available on our website. And we're in the process of putting together a final report that'll encompass the entire sampling effort. And that should be ready by the summer. And all of the results from that sampling will again be available. And like I said, we've posted the preliminary results from 2013 on our website. And the last piece will be the 2015 results that's not yet available. So again, with lily bulb cultivation and addressing those discharges, we're going to come back to developing a permit there, just as in Tule Lake. But for the immediate future, once the monitoring report is finalized, we're going to look at what our next steps are from there. So I just want to summarize here, this lengthy presentation, I'm going to summarize our priorities. So again, we're currently working to renew the Scott and Chester River watershed conditional waivers, and we have a staff person dedicated to that. I'm going to be working on the vineyard and orchard permit, and then we're going to be working with our partners in the Upper Klamath and Tule Lake watersheds in the stewardship approach there. And to address the lily bulb cultivation, we'll be working to finalize the monitoring report and our sampling over the last 3 years for our sampling. And we'll look at our next steps from there. And I just want to emphasize the diversity of agriculture we have in the North Coast region. And our goal is to develop permits that are able to address the water quality risks specific to those areas and crops. And we're doing that with limited staff, and that's why we've come up with these priorities.
Thank you, Ben. Any comments or questions? I know we have some along the way. Board Member Gannon.
Off the mic. Mm-hmm. So, what is the requirement in the temperature TMDL?
The requirement in the temperature TMDL?
Yeah,
so, what happened with the temperature TMDL is it was challenged by Northwest Environmental Advocacy Group because it was based on the natural conditions criteria. So, we actually had to remove it from the TMDL itself. So there is no temperature component within the Oregon's TMDL at this point. So we will go back once we develop a standard that is approved by EPA and develop that standard and put it back into the TMDL at that time. So right now it's kind of a pre-TMDL conditions that we're looking at. So there's regulatory a regulatory nexus that kind of covers it.
What was the concern?
The concern was that it was based on a natural conditions criteria, and I don't know exactly the exact specifics is why they challenged it, but the criteria had a bunch of different TMDLs. I mean, there was VOD, there was a bunch of different TMDLs that had been developed, and it used the background as a surrogate, so there was some challenge to that, and so basically EPA was sued. The lawsuit was basically the Northwest Environmental Advocacy Group won, and therefore we had to make changes to any of the TMDLs that were based on that standard.
Can I mention that there's other TMDLs that have been approved for this?
Yeah, so the nutrient portion of that TMDL, of our TMDL, has been approved. So we still have, there's various components. There's the Upper Klamath River has pH, dissolved oxygen. There's a phosphorus and ammonia component. Lost River still has pH, dissolved oxygen, and chlorophyll A. So we're still working at an ask. We're just kind of really working so holistically on a nutrient removal approach, because even though the temperature's there, if we can minimize the nutrients, we get a lot of those other issues under balance.
Thank you.
Oh,
John.
Just had first two comments. I wanted to thank Oregon for working with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank you and think you're correct on the watershed wide approach. I think so much more gets done. And I appreciate you including your tribes in it. I want a follow-up question. Is it apt to end up with a different temperature element, the TMDL, than what California has? Or do you, is that speculative at this point?
We will we'll coordinate, and it will probably be, it will most likely be consistent with what California has.
Okay.
Yeah. And we coordinated on development in the past, and I think that's will be the priority going forward. So
thank you.
Great. I want to acknowledge that it's about noon. We're going to go through this item. I have four speaker cards, and then we'll break for lunch after that. So just to get to some speaker cards. All right, I'm going to do my best here. Regina Chichazoa, could that be right?
Close.
I tried. Yeah, followed by Rob Miller, by the way.
I figured Felice would have signed up before me, but I guess.
I actually have control of the order, so.
Oh, okay.
He's saving the best.
I'm saving him.
Okay. Well, I definitely want to thank everyone here for their work on this program and some very important work. I now work for the Pacific Coast Federation of Fisheries Association, so my comments here will be from them and will be dealing with issues that pertain to fish mainly. I wanted to say I've been working on WDRs in other parts of the state, and I have concerns that a lot of the actions within our WDRs, even in areas with heavy agriculture use that's not dispersed, don't include some of the same standards and guidelines. For instance, I worked on Eastern San Joaquin WDR, and they actually had standards for water use. They had standards for nutrient application. They had specific reporting requirements. And I am concerned sometimes here that we focus so much on the collaborative working together approach that we don't actually ever think about the stick part of it, that we actually do need to find some people. We do need to deal with bad guys, because good guys won't be good guys if there's not actually regulation. So that's one of my concerns on that. With Tule Lake, I think that we need to be a lot more specific with the amount of load that is coming out of Tule Lake and coming into the Klamath Straits drain. I have concerns that Oregon is very collaborative, and I love that, but they don't have a lot of actual implementation plans in place, and they don't they don't have Port of Colon in Oregon. So we have a state TMDL for a lot of nutrients. We have state TMDLs for temperature, and Oregon should be meeting those TMDLs in any way they have to. And for the Tule Lake permit to be very strong and to have actual standards and requirements will help them obtain that TMDL, and will also make it so that salmon can survive when they make it to Keno Reservoir, which is one of the main concerns here. So that is something that I've worked with Ben on, and I appreciate it.
that he has been doing comments in all the processes that have to do with Tule Lake, have to do with the Strait Strain, even though it's in Oregon. But I just think California needs to make sure that Oregon stays strong in meeting the TMDL requirements. I feel like we need to take grazing more seriously when we're looking into these TMDLs, these requirements, and these WDRs. I think that if conditional waivers are not being shown to be effective, then they should be real WDRs with set standards, reporting requirements, and requirements for actually obtaining the TMDL at some time. Because we can't just keep having voluntary actions without making sure that we're not actually meeting our TMDLs and requirements. So while I think this collaborative approach is great, if it's not being effective, it needs to change into actually hardcore standards, in my opinion. So that, and then I also think we need to look at, like I said, some of the ways to discharge permitting processes have actually included the way that water is used as part of the permits. Because when you have tailwater returns, you're obviously going to have more pollution, and tailwater returns don't happen without flood irrigation as much. So I think we should look at how water is being used as part of these TMDLs. In the San Joaquin, for instance, they actually use flow at times in order to flush, in order to dilute some of the nutrient pollution or some of the chemical pollution. In these watersheds, I'm not even all the time seeing monitoring for some of the more serious chemicals, or even nutrients specific to load coming from specific farmers. So I think these efforts are great. Obviously, Ben's doing what he can, being a one-man show. But I do think that we need to be stronger with our permitting process and not only look at collaboration, especially if we can't prove it's being effective. Thank you.
Gina, I hope to see you back here when these permits go through and get your input on specific permit as they come. Mr. John.
I would actually, because they're complex issues, would appreciate if you wrote a letter to your staff with a CC to the board, and especially what specific standards you think we're lacking. I did want to go to conditional waivers. If you don't have the conditional waiver, then you should file for report of waste discharge, and that would be a violation. One way or the other, they should be enforceable. But I am concerned that you have the impression we're not setting enough standards, they're not precise enough and tough enough. And if you had examples mm-hmm. of what other regional boards are doing, that would be really helpful. And that probably would take a letter. So I realize I'm volunteering your time, but I will volunteer my time to read it very carefully.
Great, and I will work on that. And I think if I'm seeing in this process that there are actual milestones being met and that we are going towards obtainment of TMDLs, then I wouldn't be feeling as hardcore about there needing to be tougher standards. So maybe I will see that when I'm looking over the Scott and Shasta, for instance, and right now I'm just not aware of the really good progress being made. Thank you.
Thank you, Regina. Rob Miller. Patty, can you set that time, please?
Yes.
I'm going to be pretty short. I won't need the timer.
That's all right.
I just wanted to, my name is Rob Miller. I'm president of Dillon County Farm Bureau and the Lily Ball Power in Smith River. And I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank the board for the ability to address you and say that Matt, Rebecca, Ben, Rich Fadness, and the other folks that we've come in contact with up in Smith River have been exceedingly good to work with, and we certainly were interested in giving full access wherever they needed to take sampling and so forth, and are looking forward to the summer to get the final report and then working with them to establish whatever comes out of the final report to put into effect there. So,
agreed, Rob. I think that report will allow for informed decisions to be made forward. Thank you very much for coming. Chris Howard. Then I have one after that for Felicia.
Good afternoon. Great sauna that Fortuna has down here for everybody to sit in and sweat a lot. So my name is Chris Howard. I'm the chairman of the Dillon County Board of Supervisors. And I, tier two, like Rob, am here to thank the board for the constant communication efforts, specifically by Ben here and Rebecca, and of course your director, Mr. St. John, specific to the water quality issues around lily bulbs in the Dillon County area. As we know, water quality is a huge concern to Delmar County, but also our agriculture is a huge concern. It's a very fragile economy. And I think we've made very clear to the board that these two need to go hand in hand. Because of that fragility and that making up a large part of our economy, we are concerned with how things move forward. And I think with the efforts that I've seen here, not only today, but previously from staff, that that communication that I've heard reflected upon by Board Member Grant earlier under the marijuana discussions about reaching out to the counties and making sure those discussions take place early and often are an excellent approach that I know this board will continue having with our local counties, and it's very important. And so I'm here today to show that Delmar County will specifically continue to pay close attention to these efforts around irrigated lands, and more specifically around irrigated land practices in Delmar around lily bulbs, and work with every constituent group that wants to come to the table to ensure that the success of those programs continue to take place.
Great, thank you. Comments or questions? All right, Felice, you're last. That's the last leader card I have.
Well, I think you had the best first, actually. Regina did great. How much time? I could use a half hour because there were three different presentations, at least 15 minutes, but no, I'm not going to do that.
You guys said your best high points.
Yeah, I already tried to do that. My name is Felice Pace. I'm representing the North Group Redwood Chapter of the Sierra Club. And I lived in, for those that don't know, I lived in Scott Valley in Siskiyou County for 35 years. I lived near the mouth of the Klamath, and I've worked on all these issues in all these areas for many years. Let's review. In 04, this board got the direction to develop non-point permits. In 2011, that's a bunch of years later, I was placed, along with other people, including Valerie, on advisory committee. And since then, we haven't made much progress. We don't have the permits. We used to have dates when the lily bulb permit and the Tule Lake permit were going to be drafts, were going to be released. I understand that we could use more staffing, but this is the same staffing we had when those dates were set, I believe. And I'm glad that the board has requested a work plan. We got to produce, not just produce process. Good process is important, but we got to produce product. And the Tule Lake area and the lily bulbs—they're excellent at avoiding regulation of all kinds. And I suspect that politics encourages these kind of delays. But there's serious problems up there in both of these places. And just to give you an example, the state just announced that they're regulating 1-2-3 TCP. This is from banned chemicals, soil fumigants like Telon that were banned, but it's still in the water. And it's in the water, the drinking water, at the Reservation Ranch and at the Smith River Community CSD. It's been come out in the tests, and I have those test results if you want to see them. You can request them from me. We can't afford. These are affecting people, not just the estuary and the fish, which are important, and water quality and the environment, but people are being affected in these places. And so we got to make more progress. And I don't know what that takes, but stewardship, I had an interaction with the board around stewardship, with the staff around stewardship, and they taught me that stewardship, which I've been questioning for a long time, includes an enforcement component. Those bad actors, we have to stop protecting the bad actors and start enforcing. And when the tour's there, I hope some of the sites that I've been complaining about, these on-stream feedlots, will be on that tour. I hope I'll be included in that tour, and just not the people that are going to give you the good side of things. We got to look at both sides. And I can show you both sides in any of these places, because there are good sides. So, I'm just looking for some progress here. And 2004 is a long time ago. You know, I'm not seeing a lot of progress, so I think that it makes me question whether there is the political will in some of these areas where there are powerful interests that are well connected. And when we're dealing with, particularly when we're dealing with agriculture, you know, because it's got such an exalted status, rightly so, for a lot of historical reasons in our society. Thank you.
Fleach, I look forward to working with you and getting your comments on individual permits as they come.
You bet.
Thank you. Rebecca, would you step back up here, please, for a minute? So, any last comments or questions for Rebecca or Ben or Mike? John?
I just wanted to reaffirm that our data collection of Smith River is ongoing and is happening.
So we've concluded the main sampling effort, and we are now looking at the data from that sampling effort and working on the monitoring report. And we want to take it through a peer review process before we release it.
Board Member Justine.
You started your presentation by saying one more time before us, and from our discussion last night, this may be your last time before us in this capacity. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to wish you well in your new adventure and to thank you for your service to the people of the North Coast, your professionalism, and your dedication to what I know you believe in very strongly. So thank you and good luck in your new adventure.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, this is a region very near and dear to me. This is my home, and going to the state board will... This will continue to be part of my area of interest and responsibility, so I'm not totally leaving you guys.
Absolutely. Well, Rebecca, you've been a consummate professional since the day I met you, and they're very lucky to get you up there, and look forward to working with you from there.
Different role. Okay.
Also look forward to then taking on first the Shasta and the Scott.
Yes.
Working on vineyard ordinance, get all our sleeves and buckle up and get these done. So
we'll be watching them, guys.
Get us some staff.
Yeah.
Get us more staff.
I'll put in good words.
All right.